Well, thank you very much to Andrew Stevenson, partner at Clayton Utz, and to David Byers, the Chief Executive of CEDA, and to all of the governors of CEDA who are here today. And can I thank Andrew very much for that introduction. And it was a very comprehensive introduction and covered some of the things even that I was going to talk about today. But it's much better to hear them coming from Andrew than it is from me. And to David, for your introduction as well, I think you said there's a go-ahead feel about Melbourne and Victoria, and I think there is a go-ahead feel about Melbourne and Victoria. You mentioned football. Collingwood is resurgent. You'll be pleased to know, by the way, on the Premier's website, if you haven't looked at the Premier's website, it's good. There's a lot of information there, but one of the videos on there was a promotion we did for the Big V before the interstate game. And I had Dale Thomas and Travis Cloak in my office, just randomly selected, by the way, from all of the Victorian teams, and we're kicking a footy around my office, just softly, of course. But you'll find that that's the site which is most visited on the Premier's website. But there is a great feel about our state, and Andrew mentioned EastLink, of course, opened just 2 weeks ago, 39 months, 39 kilometres of road, completed 5 months ahead of schedule, $2.5 billion of investment, the biggest road project in Australia, and a great example, I think, of what we can do and what we can deliver in Victoria. You think of major events, Melbourne Winter Masterpieces. If you haven't been down there, have a look at Art Deco, 1910 to 1939 at the MGV. It is just a sensational exhibition, and it's been on display in only five places in the world. And I've just been down today to do a promotion for Wicked, which starts on Saturday night, the only place in Australia that Wicked's coming, the huge seller overseas, bigger than Phantom, bigger than The Lion King, and we've got it here in Melbourne. So you think of all of the things we're doing in physical infrastructure, the resurgence of the Victorian teams, you think of major events, you think of the good rains we've had across the state this week, and there is really a go-ahead feel about our state. Now, can I thank CEDA for the opportunity today to talk about how our government is building for Victoria's future, about the work we're doing to ensure that Victoria genuinely is the best place in Australia to live, to work, to invest and to raise a family. In the past, I've spoken at CEDA on many occasions, and I value the great partnership that we've had with CEDA. But most recently, of course, I've spoken to CEDA about our government's plans to drive productivity in our state. Our plan, which is based on investing in human capital, on what's now known as the National Reform Agenda, on significant infrastructure investments, and also on regulation reform to reduce business costs in what is an increasingly difficult international business environment. I think it's true to say we've made significant progress in our agenda, and we are now front and centre of the national policy debate. Most recently, at last week's Council of Australian Governments meeting in Sydney, all governments agreed to what is the biggest reform in decades of business regulation, seamless national regulation, as Prime Minister Kevin Rudd called it, where we have agreed to harmonise regulation in 14 key areas. In occupational health and safety, we will see the implementation of uniform national legislation by 2011, an area that business has long highlighted for reform. Other key reforms include the development of a national trade licensing system, enabling a more mobile workforce in key trade areas, a new electronic conveyancing system to commence in 2008, the harmonisation of payroll tax administration, resulting in substantial administrative savings for business, and also a new national business names registration system, so that businesses operating now in more than one state don't have to keep registering in each individual state with just one national business registration. The federal government has also committed to incentive payments for major progress on regulatory reform, and this is something that our state welcomes. We have always argued for strong pro-competition, pro-deregulation policies with incentive policies built in to reward the states that perform best. Now, that update is not the purpose of my address today, but it's really about showing what can be achieved when different levels of government work together. And today what I want to do is to outline our government's plan to take our significant investment in infrastructure to the next level, to address, as Andrew described, the challenges, the big new challenges that we've got in climate change, water and transport. And it's a plan that goes beyond simply dealing with today's challenges. It's a plan, as I said, to make Victoria the best place, the best state in Australia to live, to work, to invest and to raise a family. And it's a plan too that involves an enduring partnership between the Victorian and federal government. It's a plan to make our schools the best in the country as we rebuild, extend or renovate every school in the state. It's a plan to make our transport infrastructure the most efficient and climate change friendly in the country, with our government now considering, of course, further significant investments in infrastructure. It's a plan to make our hospitals world leaders. As Andrew mentioned, the new Royal Women's Hospital officially open and work underway on the $1 billion Children's Hospital. It's a plan to drive a climate of new opportunities for Victoria as we enter the climate change economy. It's a plan to drought-proof our state, to restore our rivers and to provide certainty to farmers, to households and to business. And it's a plan too to make Victoria home to the best sport and arts precinct, not just in Australia, but anywhere in the world. And it's a goal which is very well advanced. This year we will see the opening of the new Melbourne Recital Hall, we will see the opening of the new Melbourne Theatre Company, we will see the new rectangular stadium complete in 2009, and as Andrew mentioned, the new convention centre. 6-star energy rating, one of only 5 buildings in Australia, the biggest convention centre in Australia, due for completion in 2009. It's an exciting agenda. Our government spent our first 8 years essentially putting in place the steps to rebuild the state, an investment which has delivered economic growth, innovation and higher standards in government services. And now what we're doing is taking action to build for the long term, to build for the future, to make our state, as I've said, the best in Australia and to lock in our way of life, to lock in our livability as we address those big challenges of climate change, of lower rainfall and the huge and growing demands on our transport system. When we came to office, 1999, it doesn't seem like that long ago, but our government inherited what was a massive infrastructure challenge. Schools and hospitals, as you know, had been shut down, train services, many of them closed across the state, and frontline staff, police, nurses and teachers had been sacked. And our government set about systematically rebuilding Victoria, project by project, suburb by suburb, town by town. We hired more doctors and nurses, more police and more teachers. We rebuilt schools, hospitals and police stations. And we invested heavily in transport services and infrastructure. We've reopened rail lines. We've delivered new rolling stock, new roads, new stations, new bus services, and we built regional fast rail from the ground up. And to put this in perspective, since 1999, we have substantially grown our infrastructure budget to the point that this year we will be investing and spending something like $4 billion on budget sector infrastructure. The last year, before we were elected to government, 1999, under the former Kennett government, the spending was $1 billion. So it's a four-fold increase, step-up in infrastructure spending. And people say that's a big increase, that's a massive increase. What are the results of that? In health, the Commonwealth State of Our Hospitals annual report last week rated our elective surgery waiting times as the best in Australia and our emergency departments the second best in Australia. In skills and education, vital to the future growth of our economy, last year Victoria trained more apprentices and more trainees than any other state in Australia. And the latest national report on schooling in Australia found that Victoria's years 3, 5 and 7 students were at or above the national average in all areas, and years 3 and 5 students were top of the class in numeracy and writing tests. In the economy generally, we are not a resource state, but I'm proud to say that Victoria leads Australia in building approvals, and in calendar 2007, we created more jobs in this state than any other state in Australia. And of course, the results, I think, of that are there for everybody to see. People are voting with their feet. In 2007, our population grew by 82,400 people, and that's on the back of the highest number of births recorded in Victoria since 1971. So we are going through now what is the biggest population boom in the state's history, bigger than the post-war migration boom and bigger than the gold rush of the 1850s. And so the task, as I said in 99, was to rebuild the state. The task today is to make Victoria, as I've said, the best place to live, work, invest and raise a family, and to do that in the face of what Andrew has described as unprecedented global and domestic challenges. I think the results show that we got the strategy right in 1999, and I firmly believe that we have the right plans in place to meet the challenges of 2008 and beyond. And the key challenges that we face in climate change, water and transport demand urgent action. They demand decisive action. Over the past 11 months as Premier, I've outlined and announced many of the actions that our government is taking to address the challenges we face as we build for the future. And today what I want to do is to touch on the key challenges of climate change, water and transport. Let me begin, if I can, with climate change. Last year I attended the UN conference on climate change in Bali. And I made a number of speeches there, and in one of those I said that climate change had the potential to create a climate of new opportunities for our state. And that, of course, won't happen on its own. It requires leadership and it requires a plan to maximise Victoria's strengths to make the most of the opportunities in a new global climate change environment. We've already invested heavily as a government in the new climate change economy. In the recent state budget, we invested $296 million in clean coal technology, large-scale renewable technology and household efficiency measures. And these new investments come on the back of Victoria's nation-leading work on climate change, which delivered the Victorian Renewable Energy Target. We were the first state to set a renewable energy target, the Victorian Energy Efficiency Target, and, of course, the commissioning of the Garnaut Review, which was released last Friday. And I want to say a few words, if I can, about Ross Garnaut's report. We've worked hard since 2000 to prepare Victoria's households and our economy for an emissions trading scheme and a price on carbon, with measures including rebates for more efficient household appliances, as well as higher building standards and retrofits for low-income homes. We've worked with the power industry to accelerate cleaner coal investments, and we've fostered renewable energy investments through our Energy Technology Innovation Strategy and VREP. VREP, by the way, will save around 27 million tonnes of greenhouse gas. It's on track to drive up to $2 billion of new investment in our state in renewable energy and to create something like 2,000 direct new jobs for Victoria. We've also worked with industry, with VECI and the Australian Industry Group, through initiatives such as Carbon Down to drive improved efficiencies in this new environment. Now, there's been a lot of second-guessing from commentators and interested parties about Garnaut, and I don't want to add to that commentary today. We will respond to the Commonwealth Green Paper when it's released in just a few weeks' time. But what I will say in relation to an emissions trading scheme is that our government is obviously very conscious of the cost pressures on working families, and we certainly support assistance to households as they adapt to a price on carbon. And we also believe that generators will need some incentives to invest and to adjust, and that trade-exposed industries should not be disadvantaged against their competitors. A softer start to the emissions trading system, on the basis that it is consistent with our Kyoto targets, would enable households, communities and industries to adapt to the changing environment. And in particular, Professor Garnaut flags an immediate need for early and matched investment in the power generation sector to begin the process of building lower emission capacity. He has suggested $1 to $2 billion to be matched by industry in coal drying, gasification and new gas technologies, or what are best described as lower emission off-the-shelf technologies. These, I believe, are good suggestions and in Victoria, we are already heading down that path. Last week in the Latrobe Valley, HRL confirmed a combined cycle coal drying and gasification plant that will add 5% to the state's generation capacity, with 30% fewer emissions and using 50% less water. And importantly, the new plant is carbon capture storage ready. Last week too, you would have seen that Origin Energy announced it will proceed with its gas-fired 550 megawatt facility at Mortlake, which will generate 70% fewer carbon emissions than coal-based generation. I want to say a couple of words, if I can, about the HRL project, because it's a case, I believe, of Victoria playing a global role in climate change. This is a partnership with a major Chinese company, Harbin, and it means that the low emissions technology, which is used at the Latrobe Valley plant, is also available to be rolled out across China. And as you know, in China at the moment, there are still 1 to 2 new coal-fired power stations which are being built each week. Each week, China is adding through coal-fired generation the equivalent of a power station large enough to supply Adelaide with its power. And so joint ventures of this type, which are about the best technology, driving down coal emissions, carbon capture storage ready, are important for our state, but most importantly, they're important for the world. Because if we want to seriously tackle CO2 emissions on a global scale, China is now the world's largest emitter. And so working in partnership with them on coal technology can do much for us, but it can do much, much more for the world. Now, the announcements that we've made in energy represent more than $1 billion in investment and will provide more than 10% additional power. They show, I think, what can be achieved as we move towards lower emissions. And further to this, today, as I speak, Energy Minister Peter Matchell will announce in Latrobe Valley at the Gippsland Energy Summit a significant breakthrough in carbon capture technology, with carbon dioxide being captured through the CSIRO research stream of the Latrobe Valley post-combustion capture project. And this project, which I looked at a few weeks ago, is at Loy Yang Power. It is capable of capturing up to 1,000 tonnes of carbon dioxide per year. The second research stream for the project will be installed at International Power Hazelwood later this year. Encouraging future investment in low emission and renewable power generation will, of course, require more Commonwealth leadership. The Commonwealth will need to provide match funding early in the piece for new low emission generation capacity, at least at the level suggested by Ross Garnaut, and probably much higher if we are to meet our emission targets. And because most of Victoria's baseload power comes from brown coal, that investment will need to be fast-tracked in Victoria and in the Latrobe Valley in particular. And this is, of course, all in addition to a significant proportion, as high as 20% of emissions trading revenue, which Ross Garnaut suggests should be invested in near-zero emission technologies such as carbon capture storage and renewables. The key, I think, to reaching our emissions targets lies in investing in the infrastructure and encouraging the technology that will drive down emissions, and that's in both clean coal technology and in renewables. And if I can, in relation to renewables, earlier this year I announced that the world's largest photovoltaic solar power station would be built in northern Victoria following True Energy's decision to invest $290 million in renewable energy company Solar Systems to build what is a 154 megawatt solar power station. That investment followed a $50 million contribution by our government and a $79.5 million contribution from the Commonwealth in 2006. Last month, you may have seen in the media, I visited Acciona's solar thermal power plant in West Nevada in the United States, and I said that I could foresee as many as 4 additional large-scale solar plants in Victoria in the future. And at that visit with Queensland Premier Anna Bligh, we announced joint funding of $680,000 to develop a detailed solar atlas to enable companies to identify the best locations for solar energy generation with land suitability and transmission network overlays. And it is certainly my view, the very strongly held view of our government, that Victoria has definite advantages in this area, in transmission infrastructure with the four 220k lines across the state, and in climate, particularly obviously north of the divide, which means that we have great potential in this state for solar generation. Let me, if I can, turn to water. The reality of climate change also means less rainfall and less water for our rivers, our farmers and our cities. I don't intend to be a pray for rain premier. Our government doesn't intend to be a pray for rain government. And that's why we are investing in critical water infrastructure to drought-proof the state. The Victorian Government's water plan centres on investing in water-saving and water-creating infrastructure. Our government's drought-proofing strategy includes our $3.1 billion desalination plant, which will create 150 billion litres of additional water for the state. And that water is always available. Doesn't matter, hail, rain, snow, doesn't matter what it is, no rain at all, that water is always available. Stages 1 and 2 of the $2 billion food bowl modernisation project, which is already underway and which, when completed, will save around 425 billion litres of water. And how much water is 425 billion litres of water? It's almost Sydney Harbour. Almost Sydney Harbour. That's the amount of water, more than that, which is lost through this system each year. This is the amount of water we will save by covering up channels, by piping channels, by eliminating seepage, leakage and evaporation. The $688 million Wimmera-Mallee pipeline, which will save 103 billion litres of water a year. I'm pleased to say about that project, due for completion in 2014, will now be complete in 2010, more water for farmers, but importantly also more waters for all of the stressed rivers in the west of the state. The $280 million Goldfield Superpipe, which is now completed and providing water security to Bendigo and to Ballarat. And of course the $174 million Gippsland Water Factory, which will provide recycled water to local industry, freeing up drinking water for that region. It is true to say, I think, in every sense of the word, that Victoria has led the way by investing in water infrastructure, and we have also led the way in environmental flows. And I want to stress this fact because, in fact, we are the only state, which is on track to meet its commitments under the Living Murray Initiative. And our infrastructure plan is the right response to the shortage of rainfall which is due to climate change. Our water infrastructure approach, something we've always advocated in this state, is now being adopted nationally, with the federal government announcing $3.7 billion in water infrastructure across Australia at last week's COAG meeting. And it is certainly my view, the view of our government, that investing in water infrastructure is the best and the most certain way to address the health of the Murray River and other stressed rivers. Investing in water-saving infrastructure reduces evaporation and it creates more water for environmental flows, for farmers and for towns and for cities. And I mentioned the Food Bowl Modernisation Project. It not only provides new water for farmers and for Melbourne, it also provides up to 200 gigalitres, 200 billion litres of new water for the environment. And the fact is that buying water entitlements now will not send extra water down the Murray because with zero allocations, there is simply no water available. Transport. Another key to addressing climate change will be the infrastructure investments that we make to increase the capacity of our transport systems. While reductions in transport emissions need to be achieved through transport technology, the fact is the less time that motorists sit in traffic, the less greenhouse gases their cars, trucks and motorcycles emit. As I know you're aware, Sir Rod Eddington recently presented the government with investing in transport, his infrastructure proposals for east-west travel across the city. On receiving Sir Rod's report, it's a big report, proposes spending a lot of money, our government began 15 weeks of public consultation on transport priorities for the state. That period of consultation, by the way, finishes next week on July 15. So far, we have received almost 500 submissions, and I expect that many of the views and priorities will be also communicated to our government when we host an online forum this Friday. So Rod provided the government with an excellent body of work on proposals to address Melbourne's east-west transport challenge, and our government is considering his recommendations along with the full range of transport proposals that have come in from across the state. Finally, can I say today about our partnership with the federal government? Addressing key infrastructure challenges in climate change, in water and in transport requires a partnership with the federal government. Leadership from Canberra is needed not only to make up for the neglect in these areas of the previous Commonwealth government, but also to build for the future. Over the past 5 years, in the whole of government budget sector, so this is things like roads and schools and hospitals, the Commonwealth has delivered nationwide just $41 billion worth of infrastructure, compared to $140 billion by Australia's states, territory and local governments. In other words, the states have been doing all of the heavy lifting. The previous Commonwealth government's record of inaction is now catching up with our national economy. Growth demands on infrastructure are outstripping the growth of the economy in many sectors. And the states can always do more, but the Commonwealth needs to do much, much more. Earlier this year, before the federal budget, I called for a new infrastructure compact that set a clear target for infrastructure investment as a percentage of GDP. I said that the Commonwealth and states must increase their combined investment in infrastructure from 4.1% of GDP to 4.5% of GDP over the next 5 years. That would translate to an extra $5 billion a year for infrastructure by 2010-11. And I mention that because in that context, I welcome the new structures that have been put in place by the federal government, Infrastructure Australia, the Building Australia Fund, and the Major Cities Unit. They are further proof, I think, that the federal government, the Rudd government, is stepping up to the mark when it comes to the nation's investment in infrastructure, and like our government, its focus is very firmly set on building for the future. And as is, of course, what is described as the COAG infrastructure audit. And today I'm pleased to be releasing Victoria's submission to COAG's infrastructure audit. And this is headed the final report to the Council of Australian Governments, Infrastructure Working Group and Infrastructure Australia. In the audit, we nominate five areas of activity. Land transport, freight access, water projects, telecommunications and climate change and energy infrastructure. The recent federal budget, as you're probably aware, opened up great opportunities. The government is responding to this need for infrastructure. The Building Australia Fund has $20 billion to invest in priority projects. The Education Fund has $11 billion for universities and training facilities to address the nation's skills demand. And the Health and Hospitals Fund, $10 billion, will enable us to push on with the modernisation of our hospitals here in Victoria, as well as other possible projects such as a new comprehensive cancer centre. In this report, we don't put up a wish list of projects. Rather, we take a comprehensive approach to where productivity is being limited due to infrastructure stresses arising from our growing economy and population. And the two-minute summary of this document in transport, you know that our government is already investing heavily in transport. Our response to the Eddington report is likely to represent the biggest single investment in transport infrastructure in the state's history, and decisions on those projects will be made before the end of the year. Based on the transport investments that our government will make, our submission lists road and rail infrastructure as a top priority over the next 20 years for Melbourne and for the rest of the state. Projects, of course, could include the east-west transport connections, they could include city loop upgrades, they could include commuter cycling paths. Second priority is freight. We know that the efficient movement of freight is crucial to Victoria's future economic growth. That's why we went ahead with channel deepening. That's why we're investing in new rail access to the port, and it's why we're planning for the long-term development of Hastings. A partnership with the Commonwealth in these areas is crucial to the Victorian economy. And what we say in this is that improving rail access to the Port of Melbourne and rail and road integration at metropolitan transport hubs are priorities. These initiatives will improve the efficiency of our freight system as well as the livability of our suburbs. Water, I mentioned water before, we are committed to drought-proofing our state, and our government's water plan focuses on water saving and water creating infrastructure. Victoria and the Commonwealth, I believe, through COAG, have shown what can be achieved when we work together. We will continue to work together on key water projects such as recycling and reuse initiatives in Melbourne, as well as irrigation upgrades in rural and regional Victoria. Telecommunications. I think we all understand the need for a world-class telecommunications network. It's essential to our knowledge-based economy. No single measure will drive us much productivity improvement as investment in telecommunications. Victoria has led the way on the rollout of broadband in our schools and hospitals, and we welcome the fact that the new federal government will be delivering a next-generation broadband commitment to all Victorians. And the final bit in this area, of course, climate change and energy infrastructure. As I outlined earlier, the new climate change economy will require investment in new infrastructure, both directly related to the energy sector, but also in other sectors such as public transport and water. And renewable energy projects and infrastructure related to carbon capture and storage are obviously priorities for our state. Finally, can I say today in conclusion, our government is taking our state building investment to the next level. And we're doing that to address the challenges of climate change, of water and transport. And the plan we're putting in place goes beyond simply dealing with today's challenges. Our goal, as I said, is to make our state genuinely the best place in Australia to live, to work, to invest and raise a family. The projects which we've already announced and which are underway in water, in transport, in health, in education, in energy and climate change, and in social infrastructure represent the biggest capital works program in nominal and in real terms in this state in the past 50 years. And when coupled with our government's response to the Eddington Report, our infrastructure program will be unprecedented in scope, in scale, and in reach. During Victoria's last major population boom in the 1950s, the then government made massive investments in infrastructure to build for the future. And today, with our biggest ever population boom, our government will also deliver, and is delivering, a massive infrastructure program to address today's challenges, but also to reap the dividends for future generations to come. Thank you.